flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Looking for a new home should be exciting, not frustrating. That's why Homes.com might just be the best home shopping site out there. Imagine searching for your dream home without ads cluttering your view. Homes.com's sleek, beautifully designed, ad-free interface makes your search simple and distraction-free. And if you're a parent, you know how important school information is. Homes.com gets it. They're the only site with detailed school and district info from multiple sources, including reviews from Niche. Plus, they've got a super comprehensive and transparent agent directory, making it easy to find the right expert to guide your journey. Oh, and here's a game changer. Homes.com always connects you directly with a listing agent who knows the home best. They even go beyond the basics, offering the most in-depth neighborhood content of any home shopping site, packed with details to help you find a community that feels like home. And the search tools? Unmatched. With 22 data visualization layers, 7 environmental layers, and filters for commute times and architectural styles, Homes.com truly is the home search you've been searching for. Go to Homes.com. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
Your official station to talk Knicks. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
All right, 305, McMonagle here with you. 3 hours down, 2 more to go on our 5-hour midnight ride. Taking your calls at 888-808-1019. And just to put a bow on the Cam Newton thing, I just want to make sure I give you the exact quotes here. Because I have to admit, like, I know the reaction to this is going to be loser mentality. It's about championships. Who wouldn't trade a championship for an MVP? Who cares about MVPs? And I grant it, as a fan, it's about winning. I don't care. And I'm sure, you know, for a lot of players, it's like that. And Judge has now won a second MVP. I'm sure Judge would rather win the World Series than get another MVP, sure. Right? And certainly as fans, I don't get that hung up on it. I'll defend him if we're having an argument. But I don't care about Cy Youngs. I don't care about MVPs. I want championships. I don't get hung up on personal accolades. We want to see winning. And I think the vast majority of players probably agree. But I don't know if this, like, I don't know if it's the craziest take. And I know he's going to get ripped for it. And he admits that it's going to be in the minority. But when asked if he would trade his MVP for a Super Bowl championship, he said no. What's more important, impact or championships? That one I kind of disagree with. I would say championships are the most important thing. But Newton said, Brad Johnson won a Super Bowl. Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl. Respectfully, Nick Foles won a Super Bowl. I know this won't be I know that's not the popular pick. My take is I'm taking individual success because I did my job. Now, doing your job is what Bill Belichick screams. That's do your job is what it's for the collective. And all one can do is do their job. But I could understand a player of Cam Newton who, I mean, we mentioned Dan Marino. We've talked about Boomer Esiason, probably even Boomer Esiason. I don't know. I wouldn't put, again, I wasn't watching that much football. I don't remember. I remember Boomer more as a Jet and a Cardinal than I do winning MVPs with the Bengals. But, I mean, Cam Newton didn't have an overly great, long career. He had the one great year, obviously a tremendous college player. And, you know, for a couple of years was one of the better players in the league, I suppose. But had the one year they went to the Super Bowl, had the one MVP season, got to a Super Bowl. But I could understand a player looking back on their career, especially one like Cam Newton, and saying, No, I don't know if I trade that MVP for anything. It's special to me. And, you know, if it's, I could have been on a different team and won a championship. I could have, you know, I was put in the position I was put in. I played the best I could play. I'm recognized as one of the, you know, how many former NFL players, how many men have actually can say they're NFL MVPs? It's a very short list, far shorter than I'm a Super Bowl champion.
Does it matter what happened in Cam's Super Bowl? That his team got destroyed, yeah. He was awful, and he's most remembered for giving up in the game.
Yes, it certainly does. Yes, it certainly does. It does.
Like Boomer's Super Bowl, he famously, like a lot of guys, left the field with a
with
lead.
With a lead, yeah. No, oh yeah, 100%. 100%. It's different. And who he lost to, let's be honest. He lost to a broken down Peyton Manning.
Right, Cam lost to the corpse of Peyton Manning.
Right. Where Boomer lost to Joe Montana, Dan Marino lost to Joe Montana.
And maybe the last time a defense will ever win a Super Bowl without an offense.
Right, exactly. Maybe. The last time we ever see that, possibly. But I'm just saying, like, I know he's going to get killed for it, and ultimately I disagree with him. I mean, I would like to think if I were in his shoes, I would rather have a championship than an MVP. I disagree with him. And I certainly disagree that impact is more important than championships. But I do understand his point. You know, to me, very few lesser quarterbacks than him have won Super Bowl championships. It doesn't make them better. I mean, I'm sure, I don't know if any of them would trade their Super Bowl rings for an MVP. Probably not. And that's part of it, too. It's what you accomplished. Like, it's one of those things like, you know, everyone, would you rather be, you know, Justin Timberlake? No, I like me. Oh, okay. He won the MVP. I could understand it. But I know as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh, boy. And he did say that one of the dumber things ever about the NBA, the WNBA being more popular than Major League Baseball. So Cam's out there, you know, just making statements. But if you really ingest it, it's not the craziest thing. But he's going to get killed for it because it's ultimately about championships. And that's what I was thinking because we're talking so much about the World Series and dropping the ball and whatever else and all these playoff rounds and Judge. I was thinking about Judge when he made the comment because as I was just defending Judge against Ohtani for the MVP, like, it doesn't matter how many MVPs Judge wins. It doesn't matter how many home runs he hits. It doesn't matter anything other. Like, all he has left to do is win a championship. And he will never be beloved the way Derek Jeter is beloved. Like, he doesn't have to win five. He doesn't have to win as many as Derek. He doesn't have to win as many as Ruth or Gehrig or Mantle or DiMaggio or Berra, who's got 10. He doesn't have to he's got to win one. And I think what we're going to find in sports is that those players don't exist anymore. Like, it's going to be very difficult to be Don Mattingly. It's going to be very difficult to be Ted Williams. It's going to be very difficult to be Dan Marino. It's going to be very difficult to be Charles Barkley. Although, I mean, I guess Charles Barkley beloved in Philadelphia or Phoenix? I don't know. Probably not. Didn't play long enough in one spot, but
he might be in Phoenix.
Yeah, because they were good and they went to the finals and stuff, but and he unfortunately fell under the rule. And now Cam doesn't necessarily fall under this because he didn't have to play Tom Brady, but it's not easy to win a championship. Like right now, like if Josh Allen never gets over the hump and beats the great Patrick Mahomes and they go on to three-peat and four-peat and five-peat and six-peat or whatever, like if he wins an MVP but never a championship, I mean, would you trade for it? Sure, but you can understand why you're proud of it. Like, I'd be proud to be an NFL MVP. And you could just, you're another guy with a championship. There's a whole bunch of them. Lesser players than me. So it's also you wanted to do, like, when you, and then the other thing is, like, when you say, oh, I'll just trade it. Trade it for what exactly? Some sort of, like, oh, I'll just, like, does he wish he won that game? I'm sure, of course he does. Like, would he trade it for that win? Like, that's the question, too, because just to say, oh, I'm a Super Bowl champion, it doesn't mean as much. Like, would you trade that MVP trophy to win that Super Bowl game? To win that specific game that you played against the Denver Broncos? Would you trade the MVP to win that game? And I think that's more of a direct question than to just say, would you rather be the MVP or call yourself an NBA, or call yourself an NFL champion? Like, take it more specifically to that game. Because I bet you his answer might be different if he thinks about it in that process. Like, I'll give you a chance to go win that game. Give me the MVP right now. I put you back on that field right now. Go win the game. I'm sure he would trade it for it. But Judge, just back to that point, it's going to be very difficult in today's day and age, and especially in baseball, when you were able to be beloved by a fan base and never win. Like, so many rounds of playoffs, that's all we care about is championships. All we care, and we don't care anymore about the great player. It doesn't matter. There are no more Ted Williams. There are no more Don Mattinglys. They don't exist. You have to win, or you won't be that guy. Now, he'll have his number retired if he hits 600 home runs and wins 4 MVPs, but he won't have the same reverence. It won't carry the same. He won't get the same ovation at Old Timers Day. It'll never be the same. It'll never be the same. So he's got to win, and dropping that ball particularly, Judge has got a lot to overcome. Because now there's a particular moment you can point to. I mean, we joke, and it's silly, but every single New Year's, every single Met fan, every single Yankee hater, every single person out there, he's going to drop the ball on January 1st on Instagram and Twitter for the rest of his life until he wins a championship. And now he's got that moment. I was just watching not too long ago, I was watching the Mike Schmidt documentary on MLB Network and talking about his struggles in the postseason prior to 1980 and then after 1980 and how he wears it. But even he's got, like, there's an at-bat here and at-bat there. Judge has these unbelievable seasons followed by poor postseasons, and now he's got literally the moment that everyone can look back on, lean on, make fun of. That is something that's going to hang with him forever until he wins a championship. So we could talk about whether he deserves the MVP over Ohtani, or whether or not he would trade MVPs for championships. He will never be beloved by Yankee fans until he wins. And that's why I hope he's in there. And you hear rumors that he's got a lot to do with Bellinger, right? That's what the owner said. And he's making decisions, and he wanted Verdugo and all this stuff. If you're going to let him, he better be a better GM than he's been. Because so hopefully he's right about Bellinger, because he was dead wrong about Verdugo. But the Yankees better win a championship with him. Andy in South Jersey. What's up, Andy?
Hey, C-Mac, how you doing tonight?
Good, buddy. How are you?
Pretty good. One quick question on this MVP thing, mm-hmm. and a quick comment. In the movie The Natural, former AL Rookie of the Year Joe Charbonneau was in that movie. Were you aware of that?
Wait, one more time?
Joe Charbonneau, 1981, American League Rookie of the Year, flash in the pan with the Cleveland Indians, was in the movie The Natural.
No, I didn't know that.
He was on the New York Knights.
I didn't know. I didn't know Joe Charbonneau existed until you just said his name. To be totally honest,
are you kidding? Oh my God! Yeah, he was like one of the flashing one hit wonder of baseball.
Yep.
Question for you on this MVP discussion.
Yes.
Do you think Derek Jeter would trade one of his rings to get MVP one time?
No, of course not.
I didn't think so either.
Nope.
But it's, you know, and I think Jeter should have won MVP one of those years. The year
2006?
Was it the year they gave it to Morneau?
Correct.
I think.
I think it was 2006, but it's 100% Morneau who won the MVP. It was definitely Morneau. I'm thinking it was 06, yeah. I wasn't 100% positive of the year, but I knew it was Morneau who got it over him. It should have been him, absolutely.
Oh, goodness. Such an anti-Yankee bias. You have to have years like Judge had, like A-Rod had, off-the-chart years to get those awards. And the idea that Mariano never won a Cy Young, Andy Pettit should have had a Cy Young the year they gave it to Hinken for Toronto.
Yeah, 96. Yeah, I guess. I don't know if I buy into all that. I mean, you know, Roger Clemens won a Cy Young in 01. Obviously now Cole has won a Cy Young. We've seen MVPs from Alex Rodriguez and Maria and Aaron Judge. I don't know if there's like real New York bias in this voting. I wish we would have seen Ohtani in the same conference, the same league, because if I would, I don't care about MVPs. If Ohtani would have beat out Judge in the MVP this year, I would have flipped, because that's ridiculous. And you look back, he should have won over Altuve in 2017. He had far better numbers than Jose Altuve in 2017. And especially now that we know he was aided with some extracurricular activities, then he definitely should have won the MVP over him. 888-808-1019. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back, talk a little Giants here, as a question has been asked. I heard Marash, to give him credit, and I was thinking along the same lines a little bit. Like, they have really attached themselves to Shedeur Sanders here. Like, we've been talking nonstop about one of the top two quarterbacks, one of the top two quarterbacks. And then we remember, you know, Sanders, obviously, when it looked like the Giants were going to have the first overall pick, wore or at least had the Giants cleats for the bowl game, and, you know, talked about it on the podcast a little bit. And Deion Sanders talked about the idea that if the Giants had the first overall pick, they would, Shedeur was not going to get past one. And now that's plausibility, and watching all the videos here, and we talked about it, whether it's neighbors going back to the Heisman Trophy night, neighbors having a catch with him in the street, to Joe Shane and Brian Daboll, a ton of videos talking about him, checking all the boxes. We got those quotes from Joe Shane, all the handshakes and you know, hugs, and that we've seen over all this time, and how close they're getting with Prime. Even saw a story today that if it doesn't work out with Brian Daboll after drafting Shedeur, that Prime could be the next head coach of the New York Giants. Are the Giants this much in on Shedeur Sanders?
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+, and we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Your official station to talk Yankees. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app. Download it today.
So as we get ready to watch Saquon Barkley in the Super Bowl and all the nonsense that's gone around with that, and how, you know, sick to our stomachs we're supposed to be as Giant fans. And I hope they're done with it. I saw Tiki put out a quote about it would be in poor taste or something along those lines. Tone deaf for Burkhart and Brady to continue to mention and take digs at the Giants during the Super Bowl. While I totally agree, it was in the NFC Championship game as well. Like, who cares? Why are we talking about the New York Giants and Saquon Barkley in a game that determines who goes to the Super Bowl? Like, it's just, oh my God, it's obnoxious. And I'm sure who knows, it probably will happen in the Super Bowl. There's no doubt. It's going to be mentioned 1,000 times. Wait for Media Day. Let's wait until Jerry. Let's see how much audio Jerry plays during the morning of Saquon Barkley answering questions about John Mara and Joe Shane and the New York Giants. Just wait. That's the worst part of all this. I don't care about watching him play. I don't even care about him getting a ring. I don't care. I don't want to hear about it for a week. It's so stupid. But as we get ready for that nonsense that's surely coming, as hopefully we get the three-peat from the Kansas City Chiefs, which, by the way, I saw something. Real quick, side note. I've heard this before. Obviously, back in the 80s, when the Los Angeles Lakers were going for a three-peat, their head coach, Pat Riley, the now obviously former head coach of the New York Knicks, executive for the Miami Heat, who is currently in a battle with Jimmy Butler. But he went and trademarked the rights to the term three-peat. And he has made money on all merchandise that has been sold throughout the last, 30-plus years. All the two Bulls three-peats, the Lakers three-peat, the Yankees three-peat, the Lakers with Kobe and Shaq. Anytime a team wins three and uses the term three-peat, that was, I forget the player, I saw the order, I forget the name of the player who actually came up with the term, but the all-wise, all-powerful, all-knowing Pat Riley was smart enough to trademark the term. So any shirt or any piece of merchandise that has ever been sold with the term three-peat since, obviously, he trademarked it, which includes both Chicago Bulls, the Lakers, and the Yankees, Pat Riley gets paid. And I saw this thing where they're expecting that to be through the roof if Kansas City wins, because no NFL team has ever done it. The amount of merchandise, now I don't know if all the merchandise will be have the word or term three-peat on it, but the amount of merchandise that goes out for the Super Bowl winning team is crazy, far bigger than any other sport. And because it'll be the first time anyone has three-peated, they're expecting three-peat to be used more than any other time in history. And so Pat Riley, as he's battling with, and suspending Butler indefinitely, is looking at an enormous payday. I don't know how many more people are gambling on how many people are gambling on Kansas City to win the Super Bowl, or, we'll get into that, and we'll get into the picks. And I'm sure we'll hear about, what the guy from Houston who owns the mattress company putting $5 million down on Kansas City or whatever. Like, we'll hear about these outrageous bets. The man poised to possibly make the most amount of money from the Super Bowl could be Pat Riley. Unbelievable, that Pat Riley. But that would be fun.
And he couldn't bring New York one.
He couldn't bring New York one? I heard Evan today too talking about the levels of bad, like which, because I mean, if you ask a New York fan, and this, I've been saying this forever, I don't know which one I prefer. I don't know if I prefer today's NBA or back then, like the style of basketball. I don't know which style of basketball I prefer aesthetically, which one I find more exciting. I mean, I think we all agree too many threes, but I think we hearken back to that time specifically here because the Knicks were good. And we'll see if the Knicks go on a run where they're good for the next 6, 7, 8 years and they play in an NBA championship or, God willing, win an NBA championship or just, are constantly in the Eastern Conference Finals and, Boston and the Knicks become a thing where they play two or three times over the next 5 years in the playoffs. I have a feeling Knicks fans might like this style of basketball. I have a feeling we here love the 90s basketball because the Knicks were good and we were in great series. And they were playing Reggie Miller at the Garden, and they were playing Michael Jordan at the Garden, and it was an incredible time to be a Knicks fan. And it hasn't been that way, and it hasn't been like that even, through the 2000s, 2010s, and now of recent ilk where, Steph Curry and the Golden State Warriors changed the way basketball has been played, and so we hate it. Oh, we don't like it. We don't like all the threes. We don't like all this stuff. We don't like it because the Knicks haven't capitalized on this brand of basketball. But now that it looks like they may, I have a feeling here in New York, we're going to start to feel differently about the style of play in the NBA. But everyone harkens back to the 90s and the nitty-gritty. That's what we love. Even my friends, too, they're so obnoxious with it. Oh, can't stand the NBA. Maybe play some defense. And while they're not wrong, necessarily, it's just we all know why we liked it. We liked it because we love John Starks, the Patrick Ewing, and Charles Oakley, and Mason. And that's why. That's why. But Shedeur Sanders and the New York Giants are attached at the hip. And you see all these clips from the Senior Bowl. And you see how close Joe Shane and Brian Daboll, all the dap-ups and them being linked, the story of checking every box, and it feels like they are connected. And it sounds like, you know, we've been talking about the two quarterbacks at the top of the draft, and I know I wanted at least one of the top two picks. I prefer Cam Ward to Shedeur Sanders. But is it a problem that the Giants seem to be? Now, listen, it would be, I don't think anybody suspects that Joe Shane is all playing us for fools and playing a very sophisticated game and making everybody believe he wants Shedeur Sanders. But in a situation where right now the Giants aren't guaranteed to get the player. And yeah, there's been some thought that Tennessee won't pass up Travis Hunter, and Shedeur doesn't want to go to Cleveland. I guess that was a report today, too. I saw he would rather go to the Giants or Tennessee. It wasn't like he closed the door on Tennessee either, but doesn't want to go to Cleveland. But the Giants need to have something go in their favor. They need Tennessee to do something different. They need Cleveland to do something different. They need one of those two teams to be willing to trade. And I do think that it is a little problematic because, I mean, and again, I heard Sean talking about this, and he's 100% right. We, year after year after year, for the most part, other than, you know, maybe Dave Gettleman tipping his hand towards Saquon Barkley at the two spot when you know a quarterback's going one and you don't have any fear there, and if you know you're not trading the pick, there's really no fear in letting it be known because you know he's not going number one and you're drafting two, and so the player you want is going to be there if it's a running back. That's the only other time we talk about all the misdirection and, like, we don't know up until the day of. I remember that same draft, right? It was Sam Darnold was going to be number one, and the Jets were going to decide between Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen. And Sam Darnold was going one up until like the day before when suddenly it got wind that Baker Mayfield was going to be the number one pick. Like, there is so much misdirection. There is so much not allowing teams. You don't want teams to know what you're looking for. And especially for the New York Giants, it would be one thing if they had the top pick. Obviously, then, you know, Caleb Williams was going to be the guy. We've known that forever. Trevor Lawrence was going to be the guy. Knew that forever. But if the Giants are in a position where they need things to break their way, and they do, on some level they do, if they're going to get a quarterback here, if they're going to get one of those two guys. To let it be known, and listen, we don't know for sure, and again, it would be really, considering the low level of, you know, expectation and his ability right now the fan base has for Joe Shane, that would be one high-level misdirection play with all the love of Shedeur Sanders. And drafting number three, you're going to have to figure it out. And right now, I was puzzled by the declaration from the Tennessee president that they won't pass up on a generational talent. Those are things you shouldn't probably say. And while I expect the Giants to do what they have to do to get the quarterback, I don't want to make it more difficult than it has to be. So maybe ease up. Maybe over the next couple of weeks we start hearing some, you know, Cam Ward love. And then the idea that, you know, Coach Prime would be the next coach of the New York Giants if they draft him, that would be, I don't know how I feel about that, to be totally honest with you. It would have to be a really bad year of development for Cam. Like, if he goes with Coach Daboll, and Daboll, I know when you say changing coaches on the young quarterback could affect him, it certainly lessens when it's not only your college coach, but your father. So I understand that on that level. Now, what offensive coordinator he would bring in or whatever the case may be, like, yes, I guess that would lessen the idea of changing a coach on a young developing quarterback if you're literally bringing in his college coach and his father. Maybe that's not as detrimental as going from Pat Shurmur to Joe Judge. That was probably more detrimental. But if he comes in here and plays anywhere near the level of football or shows any sort of development level on any, you know, progress level at all, I'm not taking Brian. That's why I hate this whole idea of, you know, the way Mara treated the press conference. Because if he comes in here and any quarterback, him, Cam Ward, Jackson Dart, Milroe, whomever, if they come in and play either from day one or halfway through the year and show somewhat of promise, like even what we saw from Atlanta this year. Like, if he comes in late in the year and shows that kind of progress, even in a handful of games, that would be enough for me to guarantee bringing back the head coach. If the Giants get any kind of success, like Michael Penix came in end of the year, played well enough to have hope, right? Moving into this next year, if you're a Falcons fan, you feel like, hey, he played really well last year. He showed me a lot. The arm was good. Young quarterback moving forward. Feel good about it. Even if it's just a couple of games, if they go out and get a veteran and they want Shador to ride the bench or Cam Ward to ride the bench, and at the tail end of the year, they bring him up and he plays four or five games. But in those four or five games, we see promise. In those four or five games, Giant fans are excited about next year. I don't care what the record is. I'm bringing back Brian Daboll. And that's why I hated the stupid press conference, or at least, you know, whatever, the meeting the media the day after announcing they're staying. Because what if the Giants win five games, but the last three games of the year, Shador Sanders or Cam Ward throw for, you know, three touchdown passes, lead the team down the field in the fourth quarter and win one of those five wins, look like a legitimate quarterback where everybody's pumped for next year, and now you're going to change quarterbacks on him? It's not about winning. Right? We could talk to We're Blue in the Face about how difficult the schedule is at home next year and everything like that. Like, to me, if we see anything from one of these two quarterbacks, even at that level, forget all year long where he shows improvement from the beginning to the end and you feel good, it could just be a handful of games. If I'm excited about how the quarterback played in his rookie season, and I am pumped about moving forward next year with him, like, legitimately excited, not just like, well, we'll see, he wasn't terrible, I hope, like, no, like, legitimately, wow, he played really well in that game, or wow, he showed crazy ability. He threw three touchdown passes. He, you know, he led the team back from, you know, two touchdowns down, or whatever, I don't know, anything. I don't care how many games they win. I'm not changing coaches on them. I'm not doing it. So the report that, you know, with how close they seem to be not only to Shador, but to Deion, the idea that that could be the next head coach of the New York Giants after he sort of dipped his toe in the NFL water for about, a you know, 3 days with the idea of him possibly becoming the next Dallas Cowboys head coach, unless his son is a bust year one, unless there shows no progress, unless Brian Daboll clearly got nothing out of him, I'm not changing coaches, not even to go to his father and his college coach. 888-808-1019. Let's get to the calls a little bit. Maury in Belmore. What's up, Maury?
Tonight is your night, bro. You know, it almost contradicts. What are these two guys going to do? Are they on the firing line? Do they have time to take a young number one draft pick and mold them into a great quarterback? You're so right. The owner has put these guys either, like, almost in the middle of the ice, ready to break. Because, like, you want him here for two more years to help, but then they have a gun to the head based on his final comment. So I feel like we need to maybe get Sanders to potentially set up his father coming here. I don't know. Can he send him to his room if he has a bad game? I don't know, but I'm concerned about that.
Yeah, well,
even that last game.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, even that last game that they played, I mean, his son didn't look very good. Giants cleats or not, they didn't look very good.
No.
Maybe it's the extended team. And then, so I'm concerned about that because I think that the owner really, like you said, threw a curveball. Everything seemed okay, we're going to keep these guys. And then that last comment is, I don't want to be in this spot next year.
Right. Well, I better be in a better mood. Okay, I better be in a better mood next year. And that, I guess that could mean
so
a
now
lot.
Now Shane's like, yeah, I need a number one. I need to get him in place. I need to make sure it works. And I still have a job. So to me, I don't know. Let's see how it goes. And then with the Nickies, one player away. Don't know who it is. Don't know where. But I think we're just one player away. I love our chances. Christopher,
yeah.
I haven't felt this craziness about the Knicks.
I agree.
He was just saying.
No, there's no doubt. There's not. Absolutely. There since 1999. And thank you for the call, Maury. Tonight is your night, bro. I have not felt this good about the Knicks since 1999. Even last year, love the team, did not feel they were capable as I feel they are right now. Now, the question with them is Mitchell Robinson, right? I don't know when he's going to come back, the impact he could have on the team. I mean, clearly, like we saw the bench, right, play their ass off in this last game against Denver. And hopefully it opens the door for Tibbs to be willing to play these guys more often, right? We saw a 8-man or 9-man rotation in that game two nights ago against Denver. Could we see that more regularly? I would hope so. I would hope Tibbs is starting to gain more confidence. Surely in McBride, who hit the scene last year with a great year. You know, offensively, his impact has waned a little bit this year, but we've seen the ability. And I would love to obviously get him more time, what we're seeing from Payne and Achiuwa. And early on in the year, they didn't even have Achiuwa. So as the bench continues to unfold, you would hope that Tibbs continues to have more and more confidence in these guys and plays more and more of these guys. And Mitchell Robinson would only add to it. And you would feel like this team moving forward would have a legitimate bench. This team moving forward has that backup center, a defensive rim protector and rebounder for the second unit. And ultimately, would be a far better team, a far rested team, a far more healthy team, you would hope, heading into the postseason, as long as Mitchell Robinson can stay healthy. But is that second center, defensive rim protector kind of guy as useful as a guy who can come in and provide more offense? And I guess that, to me, that's the kind of question. One, the money he's making. What could you get for Mitchell Robinson? Like, could he be a part of a package that brings you a player? Like, because that's the thing. Like, the defense hasn't been the same this year. Over the last handful of games, they've been better at least getting turnovers, and they've created points off of those turnovers. 23 points off of 12 turnovers, something like that. 23 points off 12 or 23 points off 14 turnovers in the last game against Denver. So they've been playing a little bit better defense. But they're not a great defensive team. That's not their strength. It might have been at times last year. So far this year, it's not. And the question is, to me, sort of, do you wait for Mitchell Robinson to come back, hope he can stay healthy, and feel like you're a better team because he helps in that area of defending the rim a little bit and helping you defensively on some level? Or do you say, screw it, I'm not going to be a good defensive team this year. I'm going to win with my offense. Let me see what I could do to bring in another offensive player at either the four. And I was talking with this with Big Zoo before I got in, to start the show. He would love to have an offensive player at the four position, or at least, you know, just someone there who can hit a shot, play defense, and have Josh Hart coming off the bench, because the impact of a player like that off the bench could make the team a more well-rounded team. I don't have a problem necessarily with Josh Hart being the starter. And this year, you know, his ability to create, you know, triple doubles and, you know, play the way he's played this year. I do understand the idea that if you have a Josh Hart type off the bench, that means your roster is a championship caliber roster. But like, do you go out there and improve either the depth at scoring, the depth as a guard scoring? Like, do I just say, hey, forget trying to improve my weakness. Let me strengthen my strength and go out there and try and score 135 to 140 points and see if I could be the best offensive team in the NBA and win that way. As opposed to, well, you know, let's keep Mitch, maybe bring in another, you know, player who can help my defense, help my perimeter defense, help me protect rims, help me get rebounds, and fix some of the problems I have. Or do you go out there and try and bolster your strength and get offensive and give more options in the rotation, more opportunities to give Brunson a breath? You know, give Bridges some time off, who he plays every single minute of almost every game. Give Anunoby some time on the bench because he looks exhausted, ready for the All-Star break. And it's not like they're going to have a lot of time to see Mitch. I mean, the trade deadline is less than a week away. I don't even know if Mitch is going to make it back for the trade deadline. In fact, I guess he's probably not.
Your official station to talk Jets. The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app. Download it today.
So let's add another one to the long list of indications that Shedeur Sanders is going to be a New York Giant. We just talked about a bunch of them. There was the cleats at his bowl game that he had before the game. I don't think he never wore them, but he had them made up before the game. Obviously, all the talk since, having a catch with Malik Nabers out in the street the night of the Heisman Trophy Awards ceremony, or right around that time. That's why he was in New York or whatever, I guess. I don't know. And then the constant videos and discussions from the Giants and Shedeur Sanders, how many times Joe Shane has been to Colorado, they were at the bowl game, just all of it. And now Shedeur Sanders, who obviously was fine with going to the Giants, he made cleats. There is some reports that he wouldn't want to be in Cleveland, but he's being interviewed at the Senior Bowl on the sidelines. And the game is obviously being played in Jerry's World. So it's being played at the Dallas Stadium. Was it AT&T? I always forget that. And so he's on the sideline being asked, and here's another little clue to where he feels he may be drafted.
Now, being in this stadium is definitely fun. I know I'll play here very soon against the Cowboys. it's definitely a dream come true being able to be at this bowl game, watching my brothers out there, watching my team.
So, I'm sorry, that's the Shrine Bowl, not the Senior Bowl. That's on Saturday. But he's going to be playing against the Cowboys real soon. Now, look, a lot of teams play against the Cowboys. He could just mean I'm entering the NFL. But something tells me all the connections to the New York Giants, the tone in his voice there, the inflection of playing against the Cowboys makes me think he thinks he's going in the division. I mean, everything is pointing to Shedeur Sanders being a Giant. And I'll tell you, I couldn't be happier. I think you're all crazy. I have no idea. I am not a scout. I am not a perv. I don't do this for a living. I can't guarantee you he'll be successful. I don't, you know, I wanted Sam Darnold over Saquon Barkley. That would have been what I had done at the draft all those years ago, right? I had no idea. Who knew? This is not what I do. But I know they need a damn quarterback. And I know he's at the top of the draft. I know he's been successful in college. I know he's the best pure thrower in this draft. I know he's accurate. I know he's pretty damn good. And I know the Giants are in desperate need of a franchise builder. And he has turned around two programs in college. Does it mean anything? No. But if you think they're better off taking a different position and you think they're better off finding their quarterback elsewhere and you think they're better off paying some sort of veteran or kicking this thing down the line, they're not. When you have three wins and you don't have a quarterback and you're drafting in the top three, you get a quarterback. And whether it's Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward, I personally like Cam Ward better. But if Joe Shane, who was literally brought here because of his working relationships with quarterbacks, namely Josh Allen. That's why he became a candidate for a head coach in the NFL. That's why the Giants brought him in. He has been not given that young quarterback. He desperately needs one. If that's the guy they believe is the guy, if Shane and Dable, who were not fired but retained, who are still here running the New York Giants, if they believe Shedeur Sanders is that kind of player who checks every box, who can change a franchise, who can be a franchise quarterback for them moving forward, then you go do it. And they're not in some miserable position where he's doomed to fail. They have a Pro Bowl caliber left tackle. Aluminor is a good right tackle. They have money in the below the cap to go spend and get some interior offensive linemen and try and fix the offensive line. They have a young, dynamic, number one wide receiver in Malik Nabers. They've got a young, talented running back in Tracy. They've got an offensive-minded head coach. There is no reason that Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward, or any other young quarterback is doomed to fail. Their roster is no better or worse than Washington, and Jaden Daniels transformed them into an NFC championship game caliber team. That's the move. And if they believe Shedeur Sanders is the guy, and that's who they want to draft because he checks all the boxes, and they have to move up, then they have to move up. I wish, you know, maybe on some level it wasn't so obvious that they want him, because it makes it maybe a little bit easier for teams to hold their feet to the fire and get more out of them or whatever the case may be. But honestly, the more I think about it, how they know the Giants are desperate for a quarterback, whether it's Shedeur Sanders or Cam Ward. Like, they know. The Tennessee Titans know damn well how bad the Giants need a quarterback. And if the Giants call the Tennessee Titans and say, what is it going to take for number one, does it really make a difference how much they love Shedeur Sanders or how much they've made that obvious? When you get called to trade the number one pick, you ask for the moon and stars. Plain and simple. And the New York Giants would be right to pay it. 888-808-1019. Stuart in Brooklyn, what's up, Stu?
Yeah, good morning. I agree with you, Chris. They have to get a quarterback. And I think if you brought Shedeur in, that doesn't necessarily mean that Daddy's going to follow.
No.
Although, you know, it doesn't mean that. They have to give Brian Dable that opportunity because he was brought here to do that.
Well, it certainly wouldn't happen this year. They're just saying, you know, there's been some reports that they're close and people are speculating that he could be the next coach of the New York Giants if it fails with Brian Dable.
The thing is, why did John Mara have to come out and say he expects the team to make the plays?
He didn't specifically say, and I'm sorry, Stu, I'd love to give you more time, but we're up against the top. He didn't specifically say they need to be in the playoffs. They need to win. He needs to be in a better mood. His patience is running thin. All of those cliches he gave you because it was very important to him to let you know he's frustrated. Like, we didn't know that. That was his entire point of meeting with the media that next day. Yes, we're keeping them, but I want you to know I'm unhappy too. Instead of, hey, I know you're unhappy, but let me tell you why these are still the guys. I wish that's how he handled it. I wish he handled it like that. That's what I wanted to hear from the owner. Hey, I know many of you disagree with this, but I'm telling you, these are the guys. For whatever reason, it hasn't worked these last 2 years, and I'm as frustrated as ever. But I talked to them on Friday, because that was the report that they spoke the Friday before that press conference. I spoke to them on Friday, and the message they gave me 3 years ago, and the message they gave me on Friday, I still believe is the message that will lead this team to the promised land. And that's why I'm keeping them. Because I believe in them, and I fully expect this thing to turn around. And then when asked if he has, you know, do they need to do something? Is there a level of progress that needs to be shown? Like, I expect progress, and I expect them to give it to me. That's it. Instead, we got, listen, I know you hate this. I hate it too. I don't really want to make this decision. You know, we had a pretty good draft. And, you know, Dable did win Coach of the Year a few years ago. So, I mean, that just didn't go poof. I mean, that's somewhere still in there deep down, even though I can't see it. And then what happens next year? Oh, next year better be freaking better, or I swear these guys, oh, heads will roll. Don't you worry about it. Trust me, I'll fire them if I have to fire them. Like that. That was the press conference. That was meeting the media. I don't know, but I guess I'm going to do this now. Hated it. But hopefully they get it right, because all that matters is they get the quarterback right. And I promise you, whatever John Mara said, I fully expect him to understand that if they let them draft a quarterback, if you let these two men stay and you let them make a decision like who's the quarterback going to be for the next 4 or 5 years for the franchise, I mean, you can't make a more important decision as a GM and head coach. If he's going to let them stay and make that decision, if there is any sort of promise, even while losing, the same owner who told you they ruined Daniel Jones by changing coaches on him, there is no way in hell they're going to move on from Brian Daboll and Joe Shane. I just don't believe it. Unless it's a complete disaster. And they place your door from day one, and he's awful. Awful. Other than that, there's no way they're going to move on from him, despite how terrible he handled the media.